because the cost of batteries have come down so much and they're continuing to come down, the economics behind reuse have gone the opposite way. So we're actually seeing greater demand for recycling over reuse as a result of lower new battery costs.
The Manhattan Project allowed the United States to defeat Nazi Germany.
We're going to be doing one thing, and one thing only, killing Nazis.
Project Apollo put a person on the moon.
It's one small step for man.
And hastened the defeat of the Soviet Union.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Today, I think that Western supply chains are more vulnerable to China than most people realize.
Let's say China.
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 The question that I kind of have is, does the U.S. even want to stay a superpower?
China.
Welcome to the Minerals Manhattan Project. I'm your host, Emily Hirsch, and I'm joined today by Tim Johnston, the co-founder and executive chairman of Li-Cycle, which is one of the leaders in the North American battery recycling field. Welcome to the Minerals Manhattan Project, Tim.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. And I think you're joining us, even though your accent is Australian, you are solidly a member of the Americas and even the North Americas. Is that right?
Well, that's very flattering. Yeah, no. So originally from Australia, I've been here in North America now for the last 5 years.
And you are in Canada.
I am in Canada. I've been in Canada for 4 years. I was in the US before that.
So Li-Cycle, I'm going to cut right into it. Especially in the United States, when everybody talks about battery supply chains, lithium ion batteries, immediately, especially the millennials, want to jump straight to recycling. Can you explain to me what recycling a lithium ion battery means?
That's a really good question. Recycling a lithium ion battery, it means different things to different people. The traditional way of, and we sort of do this in parentheses, recycling of lithium battery was more about disposal of waste. And it was typically done through an incineration process whereby batteries would be burnt, the volatiles would be burnt off, like the plastics and the electrolyte. And then people would seek to recover things like nickel and cobalt and copper from the batteries. This model is expensive and requires a lot of energy inputs, et cetera. Where Li-Cycle is different to this is that our process, we don't heat the batteries up at all. Everything's done at room temperature or thereabouts. We don't release any nasty emissions from burning off electrolytes or plastics, therefore. And what we're actually able to do is not just recover the traditional base metals of nickel, cobalt, and copper, but we can also recover things like graphite, manganese, and most importantly, lithium.
Talk to me about the economics of battery recycling and the meaning of what a waste stream is.
Yeah, okay. So let me tackle it in two parts. Traditionally, the waste streams were predominantly the off gases. And so as they're burning off the batteries, they were generating different gaseous emissions. And then they would ultimately be left with a mixed material that could be then sent on to refining. Li-Cycle, we break the business up into two parts. We have what we call a hub and spoke model, with the hub centralizing on the refining and the spokes focused on processing batteries through to intermediate product. If you want to compare this to traditional mining, that would be similar to taking ore and then producing a concentrate and then taking the concentrate and refining it to make finished chemicals. What Li-Cycle does at the spoke level, so the beneficiation or the concentration level, is that we take batteries as our key input, and then we produce three key byproducts, or three key products, one being a shredded plastics material, one being a shredded metal material. So if you think of the components of a battery, this would include things like the copper and aluminum current collectors, and then what we call in industry black mass. Whilst it's not an attractive name, what it actually refers to is the anode and cathode components within the battery. So the graphite, but then also the oxides, the nickel, cobalt, lithium, manganese, etc. From our spoke process, we don't produce any solid waste. We seek to recycle 100% of the solid materials within the battery. We are effectively water negative, which means we consume a small amount of water, so we don't have any waste discharge water. So effectively, everything is recycled within that stream. When it comes to the refinery, now what we're doing is we're taking the black mass in, and we're producing a range of products. So we produce graphite, We produce some gypsum material, copper cathode, manganese hydroxide, and nickel cobalt sulfate, and then ultimately a lithium carbonate with a byproduct of sodium sulfate. The goal with the refinery is to not produce, once again, not produce any waste solid material, but to be able to produce products from each of the individual streams from the recycling process. The process itself generates a small amount of bleed water, but it's at levels safe enough to be discharged and processed through local wastewater treatment plants.
So let me see if I can simplify this. Your input is spent batteries or batteries that nobody wants anymore. And then you from there go to three streams. You've got plastics, metals, and black mass. And your plastics are clearly plastics. Your metals were aluminum and copper. And then your black mass is anode, cathode. Where does the electrolyte go?
So the electrolyte typically goes with the black mass. When we sell, we have the ability to either refine our own black mass or sell it to third parties. People who buy black mass don't like to buy dry black mass. And so even people who, you know, incinerate batteries and generate black mass that way, they still actually have to add water back into it. And the reason is because black mass obviously contains things like nickel and cobalt. And so you're trying to avoid dusting. And so our electrolyte ends up going with the black mass stream. And then in the refinery, we're able to leach that to get the lithium back.
This is really interesting. So you first, we shred the batteries. We do a physical separation process of some kind. You've got your three streams. Does the plastic stream and the metal stream generate economic value for you? Or do you get rid of them because you're a generally cool guy who's trying to do nice things for the planet?
So the plastics is generally net zero. And so it contains a small amount of copper that generally is further refined. That's our primary source of dealing with the plastics. The shredded metal material, we get paid on the LME value of the copper. And so that actually gets sent off to a copper refinery for further processing. So it's an economic benefit. Black mass obviously is an economic benefit, and the plastics is generally neutral.
Imagine I'm a 30-something-year-old millennial female from the D.C., area. I'm going to Nike. Listen, people don't know who I am. No, so I'm going to Nike and I'm buying those sneakers that are recovered from plastic from the ocean. I'm buying the yoga pants that are made with plastic because it makes me feel better. Does that mean that I can throw away my cell phone and feel better that the plastics are going to go there? The metals are going to go on to the LME and end up in, I guess, you know, electrical cables or some kind of grid system. Talk to me just about that, and we're going to get to black mass. First, the plastics and the metals. What does that mean for people throwing those plastics away? Or what can we learn about recycling in general from Li-Cycle's process?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So the plastics, I think the world over, is one of the key challenges of our day from an environmental standpoint. One of the components of a lithium-ion battery is the separator. And the separator is generally considered what we call low-density plastic, which just basically means that it's relatively light. Low-density plastics are traditionally less desirable from a recycling perspective. And so the sources and uses for that plastic tend to be to other processes that generally need them as a fuel. And so, you know, there's groups, for example, in the US that turn low density plastic into oil. They turn it back into oil to re-refine it into different products. There's another group that we provide plastics to that will use that plastic material to provide fuel within the furnace, where they also use it to recover the copper that we send them as a separate product. Low density plastic, typically you won't find it going back into your clothing and your shoes and those things. It generally, what you're looking to do is trying to get the energy out of it and use that energy for something good.
Fascinating. And that's good because I haven't worn shoes in probably 30 days. No, I'm kidding. I've been outside my house. So, well, let's move on. So at your hub, you get it down to those three streams, and then into your spokes, you take black mass, which is anode, cathode, mush. Black matter is definitely a better term, but it is anode cathode mush, right?
Yeah. I like to call it a filter cake. And so, but mush is a very good technical term. And so we might even start to incorporate that. And so what we want to do is we want to take that black mass. And so what we've been doing for the last 12 months has been running a pilot plant. And now we're in the process of looking to scale up this refining process, where we take the black mass and we treat it hydrometallurgically. So the traditional way in which batteries were processed was trying to fit this black mass material into traditional refining streams. So if you want to think about, you know, what that means from a practical perspective, you would have a smelter typically that's receiving concentrates from wherever, nickel, cobalt concentrates, and then producing a material like what we would call as a mat, which is just a first pass through the smelter. Then they would send that mat material off to be leached through a hydrometallurgical process to be refined into individual sulfates or metal or something like that.
What does hydrometallurgical mean?
Okay, so there's two general areas of processing. There's hydrometallurgical, which basically means solution chemistry, and then there's pyrometallurgical, which is temperature. So if you think about a furnace, that falls under the category of pyrometallurgical. So what we're doing is because, and one of the reasons why, you know, those traditional forms exist is because the concentrates in which they're processing aren't always amenable to going directly to the refining hydrometallurgical process. But because of the, you know, what a battery contains, they contain oxides, it actually lends itself very nicely to go into the hydrometallurgical process. So we're bypassing a major step. And at the same time, those traditional streams, I mean, you don't typically find a nickel cobalt deposit that contains lithium. So those traditional processing streams aren't able to recover the lithium. So lithium, for example, through the traditional route would typically go to slag, and which is just the waste material from the furnace, which would then go to effectively a tailings facility or something similar. It wasn't being recovered. And so whereas because we're keeping everything in the oxide form and then we're processing it through this hydrometallurgical process, we can then selectively recover all the different metals back out, including the lithium, and nothing is lost.
So when you say that you're using a hydrometallurgical process rather than a pyrometallurgical process, my logistical-minded self says, aren't you just swapping out something that's an energy-intensive process for a process that logically would be reagent-heavy or chemical-heavy?
Yeah, I can understand why you'd go that way. The traditional pyrometallurgical process still requires the hydrometallurgical process. So it's almost a doubling up of the steps. What you're doing in the pyrometallurgical process is typically, you know, for lack of a better word, is you're trying to remove as much of the waste material as possible as slag before they go to the hydrometallurgical process. So we're basically bypassing that. The benefit of going directly to the hydrometallurgical process is that we have much lower energy consumption. So our, you know, from a green perspective, from a carbon perspective, we have a much smaller environmental footprint. And then the reagents that we use typically are those reagents in which go out with our products. So if you think about, you know, we're taking in oxides and we're producing sulfates, that's a direct result of consuming reagents that then have to go out into those products anyway.
Have you thought of a way to explain the difference between oxides and sulfates to a person who doesn't have your background? Like, why is that an important distinction?
Yeah, so it's all about what, you know, is in the battery and then what our customers want. So our customers on the refinery side are typically precursors and cathode producers. And what they want is a nickel cobalt sulfate, basically, or nickel and cobalt sulfate. I'm just going to talk about those two metals there for a moment. That's because the process in which they're doing, they need that metal in that particular form, not in the oxide form. Why an oxide's interesting is that oxides are amenable to leaching, which is just a process in the hydrometallurgical process where we're converting them from an oxide to a sulfate. That's very traditional, you know, processing that's done for lots of different things. We're just able to go after it directly without any pretreatment because of what exists in the battery.
Tim, I want to take this as an opportunity to maybe the way that a lithium ion battery is recycled then is not breaking it back apart into the elements and then putting those elements back together. Is that correct?
It essentially is, but we're doing it at a molecular level. And so rather than trying to separate out the graphite and send the graphite back to the anode makers and separate out the cathode and send it back to the cathode makers, well, what's happened during the life of the battery is that the physical characteristics within the battery have changed. So you can't do that. And so what we're doing is we're taking those components, we're breaking them back down to their original molecular level. They then don't really know. There's no history there. There's no memory that it was ever in a battery. And then we're reproducing those battery commodities to go back into batteries.
Go with me on this as a story.
Yeah.
Let's say I'm two sisters, one of them starting a cathode company, one of them starting an anode company. If I'm starting the anode company, what are the two intermediate products that I'm going to buy?
So as an anode company, traditionally what you're going to buy is flaked graphite or spherical graphite, depending on where you come from. Let's assume spherical graphite because that's ultimately what goes into the anode. And then maybe some silica and maybe some bind-up that goes in with it. And then all those components are combined.
So now come sell something that you're producing to me and my anode company.
So in the anode side, the graphite that comes out of a used battery is not suitable to go back into a battery. And the reason is because you started with that spherical graphite, which comes from flake graphite. That spherical graphite over the life of a battery, by the time it's finished its work in the battery, it's no longer spherical. It kind of looks like some sort of weird shaped asteroid in general. And because of that, it does not amenable to going back into that spherical shape. So what we do for the graphite is we actually look for secondary sources or secondary uses for it. So graphite, for example, would go into things like electrodes and steel and those sort of manufacturing processes where the physical characteristics are not as important. Cathode's very different.
I think we can then conclude that battery recycling will not be how the future anodes are made. Okay, let's jump over to my favorite side of the battery, the cathode. So I frequently have to have a conversation with policymakers more than anything that just because a country may have cobalt, lithium, nickel deposits, that is a very far step from what a cathode maker would buy. So I'm the sister, I have a cathode business. What are my major ingredients? You can pick your favorite cathode, by the way, or two.
I'm gonna pick a just we'll go with the tertiary cathodes, right? So I'm gonna make a cathode that contains nickel, cobalt, manganese, and lithium as the key components.
Great. So I'm gonna go to the manganese store and buy pure manganese.
No. So what you want to typically is you're gonna buy either a precursor, or if you're gonna make your own precursor, what you want to buy is a nickel sulfate, cobalt sulfate, and a manganese sulfate. And then you're going to combine them in whatever ratios you want. You're going to treat them. Then you're going to combine your lithium in. And you know, because we're talking tertiary, let's just assume we're consuming high nickel-based chemistries. You're going to add your lithium hydroxide in, and then you're going to be able to put that through a process to make your cathode.
Okay. So what am I going to buy from Li-Cycle?
So you're going to buy the sulfates and you're going to buy your lithium. So Li-Cycle, we focus on lithium carbonate rather than lithium hydroxide, but essentially you can buy all those individual components and then combine them and make new cathode materials from them.
So I could buy cobalt sulfate, nickel sulfate, and manganese sulfate from Li-Cycle at some point in the future.
Correct. Exactly. With the exception of manganese, which we're planning on making as a hydroxide, which would go to somebody else to make the sulfate. We're sort of an intermediate producer on the manganese side, but one step removed from the cathode.
So then feasibly from a used lithium ion battery, nickel sulfate, the cobalt sulfate, and a manganese hydroxide that could then make a manganese sulfate that could all come together with the lithium hydroxide, which the lithium carbonate could be a precursor to as well, that could make a cathode. So when to get into the nitty gritty a little about your separation process, does that mean that when you recycle the cathode portion, do you let's take the nickel and the cobalt. They are a nickel sulfate and a cobalt sulfate when they went into the cathode. Do you keep them in that chemical form or do they separate and then come back? Like, talk to me about how they go from nickel and sulfate and cobalt sulfate to cathode back to nickel and cobalt sulfate.
So depending on the cathode producer and their process that they use, they're the ones that, because they're trying to form, and the best person to talk to this is Dan from Nano One. He can describe this really well. But basically, what you're trying to do is you're trying to build a matrix of all these different metals. And depending on the process in which you're using to make these different metals, you're in that process, you're treating them with heat and different things. And that's the conversion from the sulfate through to the oxide usually. So
can I ask a dumb question?
There's no dumb questions. You can ask as many questions as you like.
Is a nickel sulfate a metal?
It contains metal in the sense that it is, the nickel is the metal, but the sulfate component makes it a chemical. So it's...
Is it like a salt or...
It's a salt.
Like what
exactly.
Kind of chemical?
It's a salt. Okay. Correct. Yeah, exactly right.
What's a salt?
A salt is...
And not like when somebody attacks another person.
Oh, no. Salt. Like as in S-A-L-T. Yeah. And so a salt is a, think about it in terms of, in the most simple form, it contains part metal and part something else, but together they make something different. And that's probably the easiest way to put it. You can think of, you know, sodium, we all use sodium chloride on our food on a regular basis, hopefully not so much at the moment, but the sodium is a metal, and then when you combine it with the chloride, it makes sodium chloride, which is a salt.
Okay, going back then to the cathode, where the cathode maker buys a salt, puts it into a cathode, and you take it back out of the cathode into a salt again.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. And so therefore completing that loop.
So I think that we've gotten, or I've at least gotten, the basics of how that works. Now that I understand it better, what are the kind of the five or three biggest misconceptions that the market has about lithium ion battery recycling?
So I think there's a number of misconceptions there. One is that all recycling is equal. And just like everything in life, not all recycling is equal. The traditional processes of incineration of batteries is not particularly environmentally friendly. And, you know, really it's a process for dealing with waste and not resource recovery focused. I would say that that's one of the key things. One of the other things that we're seeing is that there's a lot of talk about reuse versus recycling. What's better? Our view is that both have to coexist. There's going to be some element of recycling, some element of reuse. One thing that we're seeing as a trend, though, which is a common misconception, is that because the cost of batteries have come down so much and are continuing to come down, the economics behind reuse have gone the opposite way. So we're actually seeing greater demand for recycling over reuse as a result of lower new battery costs.
So let's say that I'm cathode making sister again. Could I make high quality cathodes buying all of my products with you, or do I have to blend it with original feedstock from somewhere else?
No, we produce battery grade material. So that means it's, as I said, the metal doesn't really remember where it was. So it has no memory. Except for the graphite. Good point. And therefore, we're able to produce that same battery grade material that originally went into the battery from the battery. So therefore, it's exactly the same. And
so for me, from the standpoint of the user, I don't see a difference.
From the customer's perspective, there's no difference except for they have the benefit of knowing that it comes from a recycled resource.
I do like to make decisions based on my feelings. Am I going to see then a price difference, or does it cost you more to do your process than it would be to just mine it again?
So one of the great things about recycling as we see it is that we can actually produce, we can produce lithium carbonate, we can produce these metals cheaper, both from a capital and an operating cost perspective than traditional mining. And part of the reason is that we start with such a high concentration of metals in the battery. It means that we can have a smaller footprint plant, we can have a more intensive process, and we can keep those costs down.
I want to push you on that one, though. Under what assumptions, right? Under...
So under today's, like if we look at today's pricing on across the board for the different metals and lithium, and we would consider ourselves in somewhat of a bear market over the last couple of years, we can.
What are you talking about?
You mean you haven't noticed?
Things here in Argentina, especially, yeah. It's on the ups.
It's all on the ups. So we can still make a really healthy margin where a lot of mines are really struggling at the moment.
Well, then my millennial yoga goer is correct that mining should be over and we should just recycle batteries.
No, it's a good question. And the answer is no. The reality is we need both. The demand for lithium ion batteries is growing at somewhere between 15 and 20% year on year. And what that means is that you're going to need both of them to coexist for a long time. How we see recycling is what we're trying to do is help supplement the demand side of it with what we see as being a greener option. And if we can help companies in the process of reducing the environmental footprint of these batteries, that's just an additional bonus for the whole industry.
How many years, roughly, do you think it'll take us, the world, to mine enough raw materials to satisfy battery demand?
Until we sort of see a plateauing where we can be fully self-sufficient on recycling, I don't see it in the next couple of decades. If you look at all the growth forecasts around electrification of transport with EVs, etc., you're going to need both for a long time to come.
Let's say it's 50 years. Is that a reasonable thought process?
Potentially. I mean, by the time the market is saturated, if we look at lead acid batteries, for example, as an analogous, then that demand is growing with roughly in line with GDP, which ultimately means that, you know, somewhere in the range of 95% of all the world's lead comes from a recycled resource today. It would be possible in a long, long-term scenario that we could get all our materials back from the batteries. Of course, when we're recycling, you're not recovering 100%. We recover sort of about 95% of the materials. And so you have to basically supplement whatever growth there is in demand with whatever losses there are in the recycling process with new primary production. But it would be significantly diminished at that point.
If I were to make you the new president of Bolivia,
I would be honored.
How would your knowledge of, or how would your thoughts on the feasibility of recycling impact your decision making on when a country needs? I think you kind of know where I'm getting at this question. Does your knowledge of the timeline and economics and feasibility of battery recycling impact how attractive investments in the developing world are going to look over the next 50 years?
For me, I would sort of push it to the point that if I would be trying to make advantage of the natural resources that they have today, because there's a lag between when a battery is produced and when it's recycled. You think about the life of an electric vehicle. We estimate somewhere between 7 and 10 years before that battery comes back to recycling. The further we get down that stream, the less attractive some of these resources are going to look. And so if I was in Bolivia, it would be to encourage them to try and move quickly to develop their assets and to take advantage of the market that exists today.
Do you think, let me think of how I want to phrase this.
By the way, I don't want to be the president of Bolivia.
Listen, Tim, it's already been spoken and therefore I'm sorry. Or I'm not sorry. Congratulations. Looking at it, though, let's take a less extreme case. The only thing you can't move is the mine when you look at a natural resources value chain, whereas it sounds like you can move your hubs and your spokes. What are the characteristics that you look for in a hub and a spoke?
So our spokes are designed to be small and nimble. And so we design our spokes to be able to process 5,000 tons per year of batteries. And the idea is...
Of batteries or black mass?
Of batteries.
How much black mass is in a battery? Or like, what's the percentage?
It depends on the type of battery, but somewhere around 45 to 50% of the weight of the battery is typically black mass.
Okay, cool.
And so we design these to be close to the battery source. One of the rationales around our business model is that putting these spokes close to where batteries are being generated, coming back to your concept of you can't move where the resources in mining is, we're not going to move mass population to areas that we want them. We'll go to them where those batteries are being generated. We'll produce the black mass locally to minimize the amount of material we have to move. And then we'll work on the economies of scale associated with a refinery to reprocess that black mass in a centralized location. So our business model going forward has multiple spokes, obviously, around the world, and then hubs or refining facilities, one in each of the major regions. And think of North America, Europe, and Asia, potentially more.
You really set me up for this one, Tim. So if you're someone like me, who's got a lot of ties to and spent the majority of my career in South America, what do South American countries need to do? Or how does, North-South development economics, it sounds to me like what you're telling me, coupled with what I've learned about how non-conventional brines and more resources close to the consumption centers for lithium-ion batteries, which are EV markets, does this exacerbate wealth divides between poor and rich nations?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, one of the things that we see as a benefit for our spokes, and we're working with groups to try and look at deploying these facilities in Africa, for example, which is, and I'll use Africa as sort of like a neutral sort of territory, but it applies to many of the developing countries around the world, is that these developing countries end up being what we call the home of second life electronics. So when you send your phone back and it's refurbished and sent on, or it's coming from Asia somewhere and it's going on to find a secondhand market. A lot of those markets are in the developing world. Well, you're already partway there to being ready to have that battery being recycled. And because the spokes are designed to be operated with relatively simple process understanding and knowledge, we think that we can deploy these systems locally, provide local employment, and then rely on the low-cost labor and other things to do the collection side of it, of actually going out into the communities and getting these batteries and processing them, generating revenue through the sale of the products from the facility. And then ultimately we can assist by buying black mass and refining it through to finished chemicals to make new batteries.
Cool. Well, listen, Tim, I think we are pushing towards the end of the time that we can talk about. Is there anything that I should have asked you that I didn't?
No, I think that's all really good. I think it's been a good conversation.
No, I've thought about one thing.
Okay, good.
How do you see the sort of China versus North American story for battery recycling moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And to be clear, we have strategies in both regions. And so we have people working in China today, and we have people working in the US today. As we see it, the US is currently a disproportionate consumer of batteries relative to producer of chemicals that go into batteries. And we see that the US in particular has a significant opportunity to try and capture some of those metals to put it back into their own value chains, rather than the exporting of batteries, which happens extensively in North America at the moment, back to Asia for processing and ultimately the loss of those critical materials.
So if the U.S. were to say, we are going to have a 20-year plan, fuck mining, we're going to just be the winners at recycling, would that be a reasonable strategy?
I think it needs both. I think if I could be the ultimate U.S. policymaker on this, I would ban the export of secondhand electronics.
Because you're going to be too busy with Bolivia.
I understand that. But maybe Bolivia will share my time. The U.S. as a global consumer is one of the largest consumers on the planet, obviously, and therefore is also one of the largest consumers on the planet of lithium-ion batteries and related products, but isn't producing these materials well themselves. And so by encouraging recycling and keeping those materials domestic, they can recycle them and put them back into their own economy. What they're doing by sending secondhand electronics back to Asia is they're basically exporting value for somebody else to process these materials and then sell them back to the US. And so you end up in this forever consumption cycle that could be cut off simply by recycling, or at least a large portion of it.
And the last question kind of on there is that as there's a lot of players in the battery market, I'm going to make an assumption that you would much rather have Sam Jaffe's 8-year-old Chevy Volt than my 3-year-old Samsung. And it's not 3 years old. I can't keep a phone for 3 years. It's a year old. But I'm going to assume that that's, you know, that's of more value for a battery recycler.
I mean, volume is helpful. And so volume helps reduce costs, and that's exciting. Electric vehicle batteries tend to be higher nickel, lower cobalt compared to consumer batteries. So strictly on a ton-for-ton perspective, I would take your Samsung phones day in and day out. But I mean, at life cycle, we're agnostic to chemistry. So, you know, ideally, basically what we would do is we'd say we'll take both and we'll give you back the chemicals.
Well, listen, Tim, we are actually out of time now. You can find the Minerals Manhattan Project at www.mineralsmanhattanproject.com or on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you're supposed to get a podcast. I'm at Twitter at Lithium Podcast. Tim, you are annoyingly difficult to find on social media. I want to put that out there.
Apologies for that. But you can find me on LinkedIn and you can look up LifeCycle at www.lifecycle.com.
Well, listen, Tim, this has been super fun, and I hope that you will make time in your busy schedule going forward to be the go-to lithium battery recycling question person, not just for me, but for the rest of the listeners of the podcast, and hopefully policymakers who want to understand what's realistic and what they should do to take into account the importance of recycling going forward in plans that are made today.
Excellent. No, I look forward to future conversations. Thank you for your time, Emily.
Cheers, Tim.
The Minerals Manhattan Project is hosted by Emily Hirsch and produced by Emily Hirsch and Elena Peach. To continue today's conversation, follow Emily on Twitter at Lithium Podcast and visit our website at batterymaterials.energy. Enjoyed today's episode? Please share with others and rate the Minerals Manhattan Project on wherever you get your podcasts. Have content suggestions or interested in being featured as a guest in a future episode? Please contact us via our website or the Twitters.